So welcome to the Creativity Cafe, where we get to explore creativity in all its aspects, from designing your lifestyle, your work and business, to creating more beautiful and sustainable solutions to global challenges. I'm Katie Curtin, and I'm hosting this cafe because creativity and helping changemakers thrive and get their work out in the world is what I'm all about. And you can visit me at my website at www.katiecurtin.com. And today's guest is Michelle Talker, who will be talking about revisiting Cinderella, how fairy tales can change your life. And I first met Michelle when I got stuck working on a transformational story that came out of a profound personal experience of grief and trauma. And she helped me get unstuck. And later, actually, I even worked with her to write a full-length play. And she also revived in me, at the same time, a passion for fairy tales that I'd had as a child. And I literally must have read the whole children's library of fairy tales. And what she did was she showed that to me as an adult, I could continue to enjoy that magic world and also mine its treasures. And I consider Michelle one of Canada's national treasures and feel so grateful to have experienced the transformative nature of her work in my own life. And I don't say that as an exaggeration. I really believe it. I think it's so. Michelle is the author of 6 books, including the celebrated book on breast cancer, How to Ride a Dragon. And she helps people access their creative imagination as a source of transformative power. And through her workshops, books, and presentations, she has been a leading promoter of mythic literacy in modern culture. And in addition to offering her own courses, Michelle has served as an artist in residence, bringing her pioneering work to organizations such as Gilda's Club of Greater Toronto, a supportive community for people with cancer, and Casey House, a hospice and treatment center for people with HIV/AIDS. So a few words on the format for today's call. I'll spend about 40 to 45 minutes talking about today's topic with Michelle, and then we'll open up the call for questions and discussions from you, our audience. And I so hope you will participate with your questions, because that will just enrich the discussion so much. If you have your computer in front of you, I'd invite you to visit our Facebook page. You can type Creativity Cafe in the search field and click on the light button and introduce yourself and post questions and comments there as they come up, if you're comfortable with that medium. So make yourself comfortable. Take a sip of your favorite brew while I welcome Michelle.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Michelle.
Thank you for such a wonderful introduction. It's great to be here. I love this concept of the virtual cafe that brings people together from all over the place.
Mm.
Just as we've been introducing ourselves, it's been amazing to see that we're in Europe and Canada and on the West Coast and in Mexico and all over the place. So
yes, and
that.
And more people have arrived, and I'm not sure where they're all from, but anyway, it's really exciting. So, Michelle, we've got lots to discuss today, but I wanted to start with what has been your own personal journey, and how did you become to be so passionate about the power of the fairy tales?
The hardest question to answer first.
Oh.
My long journey. I have always been interested in writing and communication. So from way back, I started writing when I was a young child, even like 14, I think. And I really didn't know very much about fairy tales at that time. So I didn't encounter those stories until I was older.
Oh.
Yeah, and so when I was in university, I was interested in the history of science and religion. I was going to the University of Calgary with Becky, who was on the call at that time, and I was introduced to these amazing courses in the history of ideas, the history of science, the history of religion, and the history of magic. And I got very interested in trying to understand why in the Western world our spirituality has been divided off from science. And I got involved in studying the history of witchcraft and all the extraordinarily horrible and painful things that happened to our indigenous traditions in Europe. And then, you know, life hit, and I had to find a job and stuff. So I went into journalism and then went into communication. And then in my life as a communicator, I had my business. I was working for organizations that were working in health promotion and social awareness. I was interested in promoting human well-being. And I discovered that the story, the narrative, is the most important way of communicating. So it sort of led me into the whole world of stories and storytelling and telling stories to communicate more deeply. And then I ended up becoming very interested in the oral tradition. And at that point, I was in Toronto, and I took some courses with the Toronto Storytelling School. They're now called Toronto Storytelling. They teach wonderful courses in the oral tradition, and I began to start telling stories and lift the stories from the page. At that point, I had been very caught up in the written word, and I started to release the stories from the page and kind of fly in the air waves with the narratives. And I got very interested in fairy tales because I really wasn't too sure what those stories were about, but they were speaking very richly and very deeply through this this magical symbolic language. And I began reading very voraciously Joseph Campbell's work on the power of myth and the importance of the mythic language, which had also been divided off from literacy way back when, and I began to kind of recover an understanding of myth and the power of myth through storytelling and reading Joseph Campbell. And then I still wasn't sure how to incorporate that into communication. And that kind of was something that took me years and years to understand. How do we communicate once again with one another in using this symbolic, this rich language? So I started telling fairy tales, and I did that for some time, telling these stories, getting inside these stories, starting to be really touched by these stories, and not really knowing why, but really knowing that there was something very, very powerful in them, and also possibly very healing and transformative. And then, in the 90s, I got ill. I actually injured my back and fell into a hole of chronic pain that wasn't resolvable. It didn't seem that I could get any diagnoses, and I didn't really know how long this was going to go on for or where it came from. And then people started calling it fibromyalgia, and I was in pain all through my body. Didn't really know. I had to close my business down. Was really mythologically, I had been tossed out of the status quo, and I was taking a fall. I was going through a descent, kind of leaving the surface world and really going into a deep place. And at that time, I was reading fairy tales very deeply, and I got very, very interested in the symbol of the Tower Princess. I was very interested in how many times in these stories feminine figures in particular get imprisoned in these towers. And I was ranging all over the fairy tales looking at these different pictures of tower princesses. And then I found my way really to one particular story, a very common story, the story of Rapunzel, and really began to see that that was me. I felt like Rapunzel in her tower. I felt cut off from the world. I felt imprisoned in my body. I didn't know how to get out of this condition of pain, and I was seeking some kind of cure and always left frustrated. But when I looked at that picture in the story, Rapunzel in her tower is actually singing. She's not crying for help, which is sort of what one would think she was doing. I certainly did. Before I got into that story, I thought she was crying for help. And she's singing, and I heard her singing. I could hear the song she was singing, and she was singing in this passionate, robust voice. And I had a question. I thought, what is it that enables her to be so happy within the limited conditions of her existence? And that question really was a powerful and important one for me, because it began to shift me, and I began to realize that if I couldn't find a cure for this predicament that I was in, I could possibly shift my goal and look for sources of happiness and become more contented within the state in which I found myself in the conditions of life. So I began to follow the story of Rapunzel, and I knew at that point that within the fairy tale there's a journey. Every fairy tale is a small journey within the space of only a few pages that takes us usually from some kind of wounded place to some kind of redemption. So I began to follow Rapunzel's journey and imagine all the stages that she went through as she underwent this journey. And as I embodied those places on her journey, I began to find a thread for my own and a kind of map that worked and played in the background of my everyday life and fed me and gave me a place where I could see myself from an entirely different perspective. And it ultimately led me to a place where I really did experience a great deal more pleasure, more contentment, and more happiness in my own life. I didn't actually come out of pain during that process, but I changed my response to it. I was able to shift my position with it and open up to all kinds of new sources of support and help. So that was my personal journey, and after that I began to look at how that might be shared in the context of workshops and work with other people who were going through similar kinds of processes in their lives.
Wow, that's so interesting. I'd heard parts of it, but not all of it. So, in fact, I thought you had come to fairy tales very early, so it's interesting that you came to them as an adult more. What I'm wondering is if you could tell the audience, what is your approach to fairy tales? How do you get into the fairy tale?
Okay, well, so how do you get into the fairy tale? So you can learn to tell a story, and that is a very rich process when you actually go into the story and you take it off the page and you go through all the parts of the story and you lift it up into the air and you tell it. That was certainly the first way in for me, and that kind of got me moving with it. To really get inside the story, I had to make several shifts, which have now become kind of the premises of my work. And one of them is there isn't any universal one absolute interpretation of any fairy tale. As P.L. Travers, who wrote Mary Poppins, once said, it's like a myth is like a crystal that you hang in the window, and it has all kinds of different facets, and each facet speaks to each one of us differently. What it means to me is going to mean something different to you and different to the next person, and there is no right interpretation. It's only what it means to you that's important. So that was important to me, because as I began to go into the scenes of the story, I realized that, okay, well, I have my interpretation of, I see, for example, Cinderella at the hearth in maybe a very different way than you might see Cinderella at the hearth. You might see Cinderella at the hearth in a state of grief, and I might see Cinderella in a state of absolute exhaustion. And this is important, because as we write about what we're seeing in the stories, your interpretation of her in a state of grief is going to reflect your situation in life and what your questions are, and my state of Cinderella is going to reflect my situation. So I realized that when we start to move into the stories, not just tell them from beginning to end, but actually move into the scenes and write what we're seeing, we really have to own that it's our own story, our own interpretation, and that's the right one, not what so-and-so said about Cinderella, but what I see in this place. That enables the story to become like a mirror. So that's one of the basic premises of my method. Really, really validate your own, what you see in the story. When you go into the story with your own light, what do you see with your eyes? What do you hear with your ears? What is your own particular experience of this story? Because that will be very telling to you about what this story is to you and means to you. And another one of the premises of the work that I do is something that I there is three. So the second one is that the story is like a country. I see it not necessarily in a linear way, but as a country that you can range all over. So you can go to different places in the story. All the different events of the story take place in places, and you can go to these places and you can look around and see what they mean to you. And everything that you're learning about what you're seeing is going to be speaking to you in some way. It's a country. And then the third thing is very important thing that I learned when I was taking the courses early on with the Toronto Storytellers. And the storytellers taught me to accept the lines of a fairy tale as they were written, as the story was recorded, to accept it as it is and not attempt to change it. And this is something that's with fairy tales, like there's they come with warts and all. They're not all, you know, perfect. There's little parts of these stories that bother us or rub us the wrong way or aren't politically correct. And but the thing is that if you accept the lines as they're written, then you have the opportunity to go in between them and look between them and see what's actually happening in the lines as they've been written and learn something about, let the story speak to you. So, for example, one of the things that happens often when people go into Red Riding Hood, and I've heard this over the years many, many times, is that people go into that story and they say, you know, like the wolf gets such a bad rap. I just don't like this wolf. I don't like the way this wolf is characterized. I'm going to rewrite this story, and I'm going to make this wolf a nice doggy, you know, just a nice guy who's really had bad PR. And so they rewrite the story. But the issue there is that if you don't actually meet the wolf in its own terms, you can't really appreciate what the story is saying about that aspect, that predatory aspect of the human psyche that's appearing in the story in the form of the wolf. So you might write a story that reflects how you feel about the wolf, but it really won't inform you as much as it would if you allowed that wolf to just be, and then try and come to terms with it as you meet it.
And also, I think it's interesting exploring the characters that are perhaps the bad guys in the story, and exploring those aspects of yourself that may go along with it.
Yes. Yes. Because they are all aspects of us. The story
yes.
is very much like a dream, and all the different players in the story reflect different aspects of us, which is one of the reasons why it can be so fun and also therapeutic to go into the different characters as they are. I mean, if you become one of the stepsisters in a fit of rage and frustration, she allows you to, like, release all that frustration and rage that may be inside you, and at the same time, learn from that place, learn what that part of you is,
yes.
have that available to you.
Well, anything else that you would like to say on that particular aspect, or I'll go into my next question?
No, I think that's
That's it.
There's
now.
Lots more that can be said about that, but maybe yeah. Maybe there will be questions about that.
Yeah. So what I would love to hear from you is some examples of the things that others have found in fairy tales that have been helpful to them.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that there's people on the call who actually could speak to that themselves, because I'm sure there are people who have done this work and have experienced the story in different ways. It's hard for me to tell their stories, so I may turn this question back to you, actually, to begin with.
Okay.
Because I know, Katie, you've worked with a number of stories with me and on your own, and you recently worked with the story of Cinderella. So is there anything that, would you like to tackle that question to start with?
Okay, I can say a few things. Well, I mean, I've just had such fun actually going into these characters, and they've been so revealing about where I'm at a particular point. And there's a couple of characters that have really caught my interest, and one of them is the 13th wise woman who basically curses a baby. And I went into that character, and I found it was really a character that epitomized the classic outsider and allowed me to look at all the feelings that I had as an outsider and look at the anger and the kind of things that one would do almost as revenge when one's left out of the feast, as is the story. More like where I've actually done the most exploration has been in the Cinderella story. And actually, I did some of that at Gilda's Club, where you held a class. And that's actually been an incredible, incredible exploration for me. And it's interesting. I had two places where I thought I wanted to explore characters. One was Cinderella, and one was the fairy godmother. And I started off thinking I would explore mostly the fairy godmother. And what in actual fact happened was I went right into the character of Cinderella, and I remember her being scrubbing the floor, and just feeling overworked and underappreciated and all those feelings. And it really allowed me to go very deeply into that at that stage in my life, and how I felt that way in my life. And then in other things, I also like the fairy godmother, it was like I feel like, because I'm a coach, that I felt an identification with that character in helping trans people's lives transform. And one aspect that I found with the fairy godmother is what happens to the fairy godmother? Who looks after her? And, you know, all those questions of self-care for the of the fairy godmother. And does she get forgotten about after, you know, at the end of the story? So it's very interesting how one dives into it. And you really see what things are kind of bugging you in your life and get new insights into it. And recently I introduced it into one of my coaching programs where we look at the question of money challenges. And what I was wanting to do is that I know there's a lot of factors that go into people's problems with money, including the way society acts with money. But I knew a lot of those aspects and had dealt with them in previous programs, and we'd gone really deep. But I felt like there was a need to go even deeper, and that fairy tales or archetypal characters can really bring out the depth and also give angles you wouldn't even think of. It's just like art. Like art, rather than just reading a newspaper article, if you read a poem, it can echo in so many ways. And so I used this recently in this program, and the depth we went into and what it was amazing, and the different places that people went to, because we mostly dealt with the Cinderella story, and there was one Cinderella who didn't even feel like if she went to the ball, she felt they would smell her kitchen stench. There were others that were, you know, at the ball already, but not sure if it was just a dream. And so it was really, really interesting there, you know, to incorporate more in my work as well as in my personal life and in my artistic development. So there's a few of my experiences.
Yeah, it's very interesting how the story provides an arena, a stage for people to find their own experience within it.
Yes.
There's basically two ways I've worked with stories. One is helping to foster each individual's journey, which is what I've been doing recently, where you find your own story and then you get support as you move through that story. And the other way is to, like what you did with Cinderella, where I tell a story and I bring people into the same story all together. It becomes a common ground for people to find their own experiences. And one of the stories that I've done repeatedly over the years in that context is the Briar Rose. That's
yes.
Grimm's version of Sleeping Beauty, which is a very interesting story with mystical depths, really. It's a very, very beautiful and profound story. And people are invited to, once the story is told, I invite them to come into the story and find the characters that they have the strongest identification with. And it can be anything. It can be an animal character, like the frog at the pond. It can be a plant, like the hedge that grows around the castle when after the princess has been put to sleep. It can be any one of the human characters in the story, the king or the queen or a suitor who tries to break through the hedge before the spell has ended. And people would find their way to these different characters and find their own predicaments and have a great deal to say about that. That where the story would speak to their own personal experience, for example, of a suitor trying to break through the hedge before it's time for the hedge to let go, might discover that he's been doing this in his life too, trying to force the situation before the situation is ready to unfold. And then also those people would be able to speak to the story and the meaning of the whole story because they were able to reflect on what that means to us as a human collective as well. So I do find it's very interesting when you go into the landscape of the story all together in one story, how much you can discover, how deeply you can go into your own personal discoveries, but also how much you can reflect back to us as a species about what that particular facet of the story is saying to us.
That's so true.
Collective of wisdom in these stories.
And just an aspect of Briar Rose, which is also in, Sleeping Beauty, is the fact that she sleeps for so long. And in actual fact, when you're going through a transformative period in your life, often you do need more sleep, or you need to retire in some way from, what we call real life, the bustling everyday life. And so if you look at the different stages of fairy tales and the different things that go on, it's really interesting to see their parallels in people's transformational journeys.
Yes, absolutely. It can give us insights from a place that is surprising, similar to the way that dreams do. You wake up after a dream and you go, oh my goodness, if I hadn't had that dream, I never would have had that revelation. I never would have had that insight. And fairy tales operate the same way, only they're waking dreams and they're already there. And the only thing that they ask us to do is go in to them. To the places that we're attracted to, and then there is some kind of encounter there. So we can encounter something about ourselves in the story. They're very much like mirrors.
Yes. And you know what? There's also something about the fact that you know where the story's going to end. Even if you're right in the middle of scrubbing the floors, or in some position which is not too much fun in that story, you know that the story's going to end well. That there is a possibility, as you said, for redemption. And so, if you're Cinderella there, you know that hey. Eventually, I'm going to go to the palace. Eventually, this is going to stop. And I think that's important to know, because it's important to have hope at any point.
Absolutely. That is an intentional aspect of these stories, I believe, that they do end in redemptive ways. And it not only gives you the hope that there's a kind of guide wire through your own journey, don't know how long it'll take, but, there's a thread. But the other thing is that using the power of your imagination, you can put yourself in those situations. You can imagine what it would be like for Cinderella to feel the lightness of being that she feels when she first walks into the ballroom. You don't necessarily know what that means to you or what that would look like in your life, but if you go there, you can actually embody that lightness of being, and it will have an effect on your whole system. So even before you arrive there, should you ever arrive there, you can arrive. You can arrive there by simply going there to that state.
Yeah, actually, you're taking me back to a moment, which was years ago when I did the Cinderella coming to the ball and first seeing the prince. And it was such a potent moment. It was just beautiful. And you feel the power of that moment. And just as you feel what it's like to be Cinderella scrubbing on the floor, and the powerlessness and the frustration and the anger or the grief or all those kinds of things. And, another thing is you've recently introduced Wonderlit. Can you explain to us what it is and what you want to do through having set that up?
Because
you took quite a long time to get that into being. It's a wonderful
site. I did. It was years and years. It's been years in the making, Wonderlit. It's online now. It's a website that you can go to that will enable you, guide you through the process of finding a story and then working with that story through a whole bunch of creative writing exercises. And there are 15 chapters in Wonderlit, and it basically derives from the storytelling work that I did have done in the community for years with people who come to my storytelling journey courses and bring in a story that they want to work with, and then they journey over a 10-week period of time with that story all the way through it. In the case of Wonderlit, what I wanted to do was allow this to be, for people, a self-directed process where they could do it in their own time, at their own pace, and either do it alone if they wish to do it in a very private way, or maybe convene a small group of people, trusted friends. They could do it together and journey through. Which is a lot of fun, actually, when you do Wonderlit with a few people, because there are opportunities to embody characters and do monologues and write out scenes and enact scenes and do improvisations and as much as you wish to imagine, and that's really fun to do in a group of people.
Yes,
so that's what Wonderlit is. That's what I have been wanting to do for years, is really give people the way to go through their stories on their own.
Mm.
Yeah, and the first 5 chapters of Wonderlit are really meant for warm-up. Like, they just allow you to go into a story and try it on, go into the scene that speaks to you, and creatively write out different scenes, meet different characters, explore the map of the story as a journey, and just look at the whole story, the story as a whole. And then the next 10 chapters are basically taking you on a journey, and they're more of the healing and transformative part of the program, where you're following your protagonist, starting at the beginning of the story where the protagonist experiences a loss or a wound, some kind of catalyst at the beginning of the story, and then you go and follow that protagonist all the way through the adventure so that you experience the epiphanies and the transformations of the story. So that's Wonderlit, and throughout there's videos, and I'm hopefully providing a little bit of support and guidance as people go through on video, and there's also a forum so that people can share if they wish to share their experiences. So it's a place where people can meet virtually.
Yeah, and it's wonderful that people can, from many different places in the world, will now be able to access your work. So I'm so happy about that. And you said, Michelle, doing it not just as individuals, but forming groups to do that work would be really fun and really fruitful. I know in terms of my work, I just got so much out of being in a group and doing these, entering into the fairy tales and embodying the characters and saying on the spot what they might say or
exactly,
feel.
It was so
rich and so wonderful.
Yeah, because a lot of this is about lifting it off the page and speaking the lines of the characters that you're hearing them say. You're basically using your imagination to see inside the scenes and imagine what it's like to stand in those characters' shoes, and then allowing yourself to actually speak from the point of view of the characters. So it really is enlivened when you can speak the words out and retell the stories in your own words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we could talk about that a long time, that's for sure. However, I just wanted to ask you, what in general are the outcomes of working with a fairy tale?
Okay, the outcomes. Well, yes, I would say there's two basically large categories of outcomes that fall into. One is the creative outcomes.
Yes.
If you're a creative writer or a storyteller or an artist, the story that you're working with can become a bed for the generation of all kinds of ideas, not just in the fairy tale itself, but in other types of writing that you may be doing, like play writing or novel writing or story writing or telling. So, because you're tapping into these themes that are so universal and characters that are so powerful in their archetypal dimension that they can really generate creative work. And visual art, too. Lots of things happen when you get into a fairy tale. It's really amazing when you get into a fairy tale what starts to happen. I mean, when I went into Cinderella several years ago after my dad died, I was going through a period of grief, and I just so wanted some source of levity. I really wanted to lighten up, and my imagination was attracting me to Charles Perrault's version of Cinderella, which is the modern version that everybody knows, with the fairy godmother and the pumpkin and the rats, and you know, yeah. I just wanted
the one I like.
Story, yeah, that had lots of glitz and glamour and material, and it does, you know, fabric, and so I got into that story, and I enjoyed it. It enlivened me. It enlivened me in the same way as the pumpkin was turned into the carriage, and the rats were turned in. The rat was turned into the driver. I mean, the rat had all kinds of stuff to say. And as I was doing this, I became very fascinated by how creative Cinderella as a character in that particular story is. She's the one who's dressing her sisters, and she's got all the fashion ideas, and they're always turning to her for creative advice. And that started to rub off on me. And as sort of what happened during the time I was in that story is I started making these little fairies. Mm. I was making them out of silk flowers, petals from flowers, and hanging them in the windows. And then I ended up selling them down the street to raise money for a charity. So all this stuff was happening while I was in Cinderella, and it all had the effect of fulfilling the wish that I had when I went into the story, which was to become enlivened by it. So a lot of it, the outcomes depend upon the wish that you have when you go into the story, for sure. But you don't really know how exactly it's going to rub off on you. But there is certainly a lot of creative outcomes. And the other set of outcomes that comes from working with the story, of course, is the healing outcomes, which happen especially if you undertake the latter part of Wonderlit. You go into the story for the transformations to really experience what the protagonist experiences as they undergo the transformation of a loss. And so those, you know, people have recovered in a variety of different ways, depending on what it is that they have felt they have lost or what they're trying to recover. You can, you know, I mean, I know people who have recovered their voice from going into the story of a princess who loses her voice at the beginning of the story because she can't speak to her father. That story became for that person a redemption of her voice and led her into all kinds of activities that involved the voice. Another person has gone into the story looking to recover an aspect of himself that he described as the artist, an artistic side of his nature that was disabled at an early age, and recovered it in the process of going through the story. So the transformative and healing outcomes are as variable as the people themselves and the wishes that they have and the intent and the depth of the intent that they have when they go in.
Beautiful. Well, I do have another question or two. However, there's such a wonderful range of people on the call. I would like to start seeing if any of them have questions. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it on question Q&A mode. And what people do is they press *6*, and they should see, or at least I should see, that they're wanting to ask a question. So if anybody has a question for Michelle right now, or even a comment on their work or their work on some aspects of Fairy Tales, or their work with Michelle herself, then please go ahead. Actually, I have one, so I'm going to just open that one up, and I think it's Tyra.
Oh, yes. How are you this morning?
Wonderful.
Hi.
Hi.
And I'm so glad to be able to talk with both of you. It's such an honor. I just wanted to ask a question. I just have been studying with Katie on another program, and in that I have changed my outlook on a certain aspect of a friend that I've kind of felt was betraying me. I guess that's what it was. And in a way, I didn't care, but in a way, I was very devastated by it. And in the transformation, I have somehow, maybe, I'm not sure, gone back to my old pattern of sort of giving in on the whole thing. But I feel it. I feel it. It's not giving in. It's not saying I'm wrong. But it is, I guess it's more forgiving in an unforgiving situation. Mm-hmm. And I just want to examine whether that's real or whether it's kind of the old neurosis popping up to get things settled. It doesn't feel that way. But how do you know the difference? Do you understand what I mean?
Okay. Well, Michelle, maybe you can answer how you would go back into the fairy tale to perhaps even see that.
Hi, Tyra. Is there an image in the fairy tale that that you connect with that feeling?
Well, it's like going through Cinderella's, if we're using Cinderella herself, which I did repeatedly, as well as other characters in the story, but I went through all the rage and the disappointment and the hurt and the stupidity of it and my reaction and so forth, and then became, I guess, the godmother or the person who's sort of loving unconditionally, and I didn't want her to go through the pain that I had gone through.
Mm. So you were experiencing,
I didn't want her to
that.
Go.
Right.
But I don't know whether that's a rationalization or not, you know, because that's been kind of my pattern. And so, you know, you don't want to slam love itself, but you also don't want to mistake it for a part of a pattern that might be, I don't know, if it's caving or, well, I don't know even how to say it.
These are,
am I making sense?
Well, they're difficult feelings to parse out. Sometimes, and I would have to, I think, know your situation much better to honestly respond to that in probably what would be a helpful way. but I think you're raising a very interesting question about when you're working with the mythic imagination, what is real? How do you know it's a real feeling? How do you know it's real? Or what's the distinction between something that is real and something that is more fantasy?
Right.
Is that a useful question to you?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, you know, what would be a good next step also of maybe it's my own fear, you know, to forgive and think maybe I would be hurt again and maybe I'm being naive. you know.
Perhaps it's, from my experience, perhaps it's just to go again into the characters.
Right.
And see what they feel, as opposed to going into your rational mind as to whether it's right or wrong, and just see how Cinderella feels now, and explore that.
Right.
I don't know, Michelle. That's,
well, because the story is such a safe
yes.
place where you can go to explore a lot of the dimensions of your own feeling. That's
uh-huh.
That's a good idea. And in particular, I mean, I think some of the places that we tend to not feel very safe to go into, but we can go into, is that place of vulnerability in the character in the story.
Yeah.
So it allows us to safely go into a place where we do feel vulnerable.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Which it did bring up a lot of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting. I don't want to take too much time with this, but it's an interesting dynamic because I would hear someone else's story, and then it would, in our class, and then I would have a totally new either character to explore or a part of myself to look into.
Right.
That was different than the way I felt, you know. You come up with another layer.
Right.
You
all
know.
The dimensions are there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Thank you. I think that if I just go into the other, into the character again with, you know, how she feels, how I feel under these situations, and just keep exploring until I have even more clarity. I had a lot of clarity. It came out very, very easily, just after a week of working on it. And then, but then that's just what I just thought of.
Yeah.
But talking with, you know, hearing both of you. Thank
well,
you
thank
so
you very much.
Yeah, keep on going with it.
Thank you, Michelle,
mm-hmm.
and thank you very much. Both of you.
Thank
wonderful.
You.
And that was a good question because it's a delicate balance, isn't it, Michelle, between really going into the story and respecting the story and almost not making too many interpretations and at the same time getting the insights for one's life.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. It's easy for the rational judging mind to kind of get in the way of the heart. This is so much about opening the heart to express and feel these different aspects of ourselves. And one of the things that I encounter quite a bit is that because people have already defined or preconceived notions about what the fairy tale is, or they may, you know, think, oh God, these princesses or these female characters are so passive, you know, so we sort of have these judgments that we can preform. And then when you leave those aside and you just embrace that character for who he or she is in that state of pain or that state of vulnerability or mystification or bewilderment or whatever it is, sometimes those are the hardest places to allow ourselves to go, but that is where there's so much self-acceptance that happens as a result of that.
Right.
Mm, thank you. Yeah. I've got a few more. So thank you once again, Tyra. And I've got a few more questions. So I'm going to go next to, let me see. It seems like it's Cynthia. Just, I don't know if I got the right name.
That's my partner. I'm Hillary.
Okay, right.
Name.
I was about to say, sometimes I get the completely wrong, so maybe I should just do the phone number instead. Anyway, hi, Hillary.
Hi, Dave. And I have a comment more. I'm an expressive arts practitioner, and one of the things that we did in our training was the hero's journey, which is similar, dealing with myth and I found that to be really overwhelming, and I really love this idea of working with a fairy tale because it's short and sweet, and I've always wanted to do more stuff with narrative, and I get really overwhelmed by it, and so I like this as a starting point to take my own art in more of a narrative direction. It doesn't feel overwhelming at all. And
yeah.
So thank you. It gives me a next step in my own artwork, and that's really valuable.
And so, actually, there's something there, Michelle, I just wanted to point out mm-hmm. to Hillary. You've really pointed out something I think important. And I found in terms of my process, I would read about the hero's journey, and I read Jung, and I did a lot of reading, but I never really understood archetypal work until I actually did Michelle's workshops and embodied the fairy tales. And I felt like I was really going into the archetypes and understanding them, like from not in an abstract way, but in a really, really deep way in my body and in my soul. So,
it feels more intimate almost because it's
exactly.
a shorter story, and you can really look at it more instead of it being like this big epic journey.
Yeah. And the characters are more human. The characters are more human. They're not sort of superhuman archetypal characters. They're ordinary, simple people.
Yeah.
And in fact, the simpletons do quite well in the fairy tales.
Well, anyway, that's all. I just wanted to say that appreciation. I really enjoyed the call. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Hillary.
Thank you. And I have another question, which is from 705, and I'm just going to open that one up.
Hello, it's Joanne. And
the question
that I have is to get more detail on the format of this exploration. I did come to call a little bit late, so I could have missed it. But you talk about the conversations and taking on the different roles and voicing the feelings. And if you are doing it alone rather than in a group, is this something that you journal, or how do you express it?
Yes, it's something that you journal. If you actually create a document or a journal specifically for this purpose, it is very helpful because you can see how your work accumulates as you go on. But yes, there are a series of creative writing exercises that you can respond to in writing in your own journal. So if you're doing it on your own, then you would just keep going in and getting new exercises whenever you have sort of allotted this time for this work, and carry on that way. If you're doing it with a group, you're doing the same thing, only you would be sharing it with a group when the group meets.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And a related question that I was going to ask you, but I just wanted to get a few more questions before that, was how do you find your story?
How do you
You're
find
your
story?
Own.
The $6 million question. Well, you find your story, everybody finds their story in different ways. Some people already know what their story is because it's been with them for a long time knocking at the door. You know, it's always been, it's always the Beauty and the Beast. It's always a story that I've thought about. It's always a story that I think about when I think about fairy tales. So it's kind of like there's one story for many that are that's knocking on the door. The first chapter of Wonderlit gives you a process where you can start to explore what your story might be by thinking about pictures that come to you when you think about fairy tales and exploring those pictures, going inside them, doing a little bit of creative writing with them so that you start to feel which story has got the strongest pull. It's a sort of, this story keeps coming back. Then you know it's your story. The first five chapters of Wonderlit are really exploration, give you a chance to get the feel for a fairy tale and come in, you know, slowly and gently so that you can get the feel for it before committing in the latter 10 chapters to a particular protagonist on a journey. But some people come in through particular pictures in scenes, you know, that they remember, and other people come in through actual physical pictures from a fairy tale that they remember and have always been with them. It's different for everybody, but it's the minute you start asking the question, "What's my fairy tale?" the journey has begun for you. That's sort of then you start following a path, and different stories come to you. Start exploring different stories. The internet is full of fairy tales. We're so richly endowed on the internet now because fairy tales, which have been told and retold in every culture of the world, going back to ancient times, many of those stories are online now. So you can find your thread in all sorts of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But they're mostly many of the classic stories are all out there. There is a website called SurlaLuneFairyTales.com, which I love. It's a sort of portal for many, many stories. That's SurlaLune, like on the moon, fairytales.com. And Heidi has all the main fairy tales and their variants there with a huge bibliography, as well as over 1,500 different illustrations from Golden Age illustrators, people who were illustrating fairy tales at the turn of the century, late 1800s and early 1900s. Gorgeous, gorgeous artwork. So there's a lot of different doorways to come in.
Mm. Wonderful. So that gives us a lot of places to look.
Yeah.
I just wanted to actually report, I just looked at our Facebook page, and there's a little comment from Mark Jenkins, who was just wanting to say hello to Katie and Michelle and everybody participating in this mythic conversation. Hello, Mark. We both know Mark, and he's a wonderful storyteller of his own, and I just adore.
Yeah.
We were at gatherings together where he told his stories, and I always remember them.
Yes, Mark, the treasure of stories, great stories.
Mm.
Yes. Well, hi, Mark.
I don't know if the person who I was just talking with had anything further on their comment. I still see them on the board. Just to check. No? Okay. Hello? Okay. And I see another question from, I think from Tyra, but it may be just I'm seeing it from before. So, Tyra, did you have another question?
Well, I actually did, but I didn't push the button.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, it's there. Magic.
And what the question is, I'm thrilled with some of the insights that I've gathered with our conversation today, because it's helping me see more and more as a Jungian therapist how it can relate. I feel like my career is changing.
Mm-hmm.
that I just have a whole world to explore, because it's where I was at one time and I've kind of gone away from it. And so it's very, talk about hope. It's very, I know what the question was.
Okay.
That what my own question initially was about, I think, is about sort of radical forgiveness, where that's wise and where it is unwise, because I can't imagine anything about love being sort of unwise, except if you're in a teaching context, maybe it's better to wait, I can't to let people find their own way a little more. I don't know.
Okay.
I will see as I go along. But
thank you.
And it's not a fully formed question.
Okay.
There's a story I recently read where I think the issue of forgiveness is treated in a way that I just would leave open to you to exploring it. But it's called Prince Darling, and it's in the Blue Fairy Book, one of Andrew Lang's colored fairy books.
Okay.
Fairy book, and it's worth reading.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, there's an issue there for her, one of the feminine character in the story.
Thank you so much. And I did not get the name of the, you said the porthole for many people was this something.com.
Oh, SurLaLuneFairyTales.com.
Parma Lou?
Yeah.
SurLaLune.
SurLaLune. So it's SurLaLune.
Okay.
FairyTales, all one word, .com.
Thank you so much. Well, it was great and to have you both, Katie,
thank you.
Talking with each other is also very enlightening. And I so appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to see if there's any other questions, anybody who would like to say something. There were a few comments just before the call began. Or just, they don't necessarily have to be questions. If you've worked with Michelle before and you have something to share, you could do that also. So I'm just going to see one more time. And then I'm going to ask Michelle my final question. And we'll end the call. But I would love to encourage anybody who still has a question or a comment to press star 6. And I'm just going to wait a moment and just to see if anybody does. And, yep, you can. Let me see. I thought I saw something there. And, nope, I don't think. I hope I'm not cutting off anybody. I don't think I see any more comments or questions. So, I'll just check our Facebook page, see if there's anything there. And actually, I have the question is, what makes you ready for the healing journey?
Well, I think we all know our own readiness. I think we all know our own readiness when we're ready to embark with the protagonist and go through the journey. But, you know, I think it occurred to me the other day when I was thinking about this question that we always, I think, we know when we're ready, when there's something vital in the story that we need to take out of that story and bring into our lives. And so it might be a quality, it might be a virtue of character that the character has or wins, you know, the courage of Bluebeard's wife, you know, who goes and opens the hidden closet, or the voice of Rapunzel, who can sing whether she's cooped up in a tower or out in a desert, you know, the wastes of the desert, or it's an aspect of strength or hope. There's something in the story that we need from the story that we want to translate into our own lives, that we need as a lifeline in our own lives. And, you know, I think that there are also some times when there's something in a story that's even an object. I was recently working with a story of the Yarrow, which is a story also in one of the colored fairy books. And in this story, the heroine in the story, to enable her lover to not hear, not be overwhelmed by the sound of the siren that is about to drown him, she takes a seashell and she pours her own song into the seashell so that he will remember and hold it up to his ear when he's overwhelmed by the siren. And, you know, there, that's an object in the story that you can lift from the story and bring right into your own life. It can become the source of ritual. It can become the source of, you know, walking around with the question of what is it that reminds me of who I really am when I'm caught up by these voices of temptation or these voices that overwhelm me. What's the voice that I really want to hear? What does it sound like? What does it say? What are the lines? What does it look like? You know, what would I put in my seashell? So the story.
I love that, you know, because when you think about it, we're all hearing. That's a lovely ritual too, because we're all hearing these negative voices often in our head about why we shouldn't do things, or tempting us to do other things than what will really give us what we need. And that's a beautiful image there.
Yes. Yeah, there are vital, vital objects and vital qualities in these stories that I think are part of what enables them to persist.
Come back in an hour.
Yeah.
Okay,
Sorry, I just got to... Sorry, continue, Michelle.
That's just these are the vital elements of the stories that enable them to persist, that cause them to persist for centuries and centuries. There's something in them.
So I don't see any additional questions. And just to tell people that if you do think of a question later, you can either put it on our Facebook page or always email it, and I can. But it's been a lovely discussion, Michelle, and so much insight you have. And I really do hope people will go to her Wonderlit .com and explore it, as well as if you have a chance and you're in Toronto, or if Michelle ever does a world tour, that you experience one of her workshops, because those are truly magical. And so, Michelle, I just wondered, is there anything further you would like to add?
No, I would just like to thank you, Katie, for the opportunity. It's just been a wonderful opportunity to speak with you about fairy tales and to come together in this way, this virtual way. I'm so delighted that you're offering this virtual cafe. It's great. And thank you to all the listeners who have hung in. It's just a wonderful opportunity to speak about a subject that's very dear to my heart.
Yes, and thank you, Michelle, and thank you for all the participants who've come, and from all places in the world, including, we were very thrilled to hear at the beginning, from Croatia. and thank you so much, Michelle, for informing us and telling us more about how journeying into the fairy tales and embodying their characters can be such a potent process for personal transformation, and also for as a powerful vehicle for creative exploration. And I've certainly experienced that in my life. And so once again, check out Michelle's new online offerings at wonderlit.com. And as I said, if you get a chance ever to take one of her live workshops, do do it. I certainly go to whatever ones I can get to. So, and she doesn't do them so often. So,
well, there's
really
one coming up in the spring
on.
At the Textile Museum here in Toronto. So,
fantastic, and I'm hoping to be there for it. I was there for your last one, and it was just wonderful. So just thank you again, our audience, for being here, and. Also, just to tell you that for help in developing your creative passions and innovative projects or creating an outside-the-box sustainable lifestyle, you can check out my website and programs at www.katiecurtin.com. So bye then, and have a wonderful week, everybody.